In a moment, we'll be turning to Romans chapter 1. Those who are following with me in my daily Bible reading schedule will know that my scheduled reading for today was from Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2, which I'll be focusing on tonight to explain a passage that some see as problematic or perhaps contradicted by other passages. But before we go there, I want to bring an update on global events that we all need to be aware of. I mentioned Dr. Joseph Mercola a few times over the past couple of years, especially in reference to his very on-point and very helpful coverage of the COVID-19 scamdemic. I have subscribed to Mercola's newsletters for many years, though I never really got the impression that Mercola is a Christian or that he sees things from a biblical perspective. He has his facts pretty well straight. But like many others who may not be Christian, he certainly sees the evil of the globalist agenda and the Great Reset agenda, and he does a great job of covering recent developments on that front via daily articles that he sends out in his newsletters. He must work tirelessly to put these things out every day. But today's headline article bore this title, quote, "Economy Expert Explains the Impending Polycrisis of Doom." Polycrisis of Doom. I thought that was an interesting title. And while for us as Christians, of course, we know we have nothing to fear, our future is as secure and as bright as the Son of God. But for the world, however, calamity and potential doom in the near future certainly appears to be both inevitable and unavoidable. And while we are still living in this world, we will obviously be affected and must be prepared for the calamities that we see coming. In Mercola's article, he summarizes the work of a guy named Adam Tooze, T-O-O-Z-E, who is a financial crisis historian. He's director, actually, of the European Institute at New York's Columbia University. And this guy is sounding a warning that the world is facing what he calls a polycrisis. And he defines that as a perfect storm of multiple global socioeconomic influences. In other words, multiple global crises of economic collapse, famine, pandemic, and escalating global warfare are converging all at one time to create a super crisis that will exceed the sum of its parts in its devastating global effects, is what he's saying. As Mercola summarized it, quote, "Tooz predicts several crises may erupt and converge over the next 6 to 18 months, including a food crisis, famine, and food shortages around the world, pandemic outbreaks, stagflation, a Eurozone sovereign debt crisis, and potential nuclear war." And of course, as we watch, the Fed's going to be meeting, I think, next week and probably raising interest rates. We're in the midst of horrible inflation and rising prices on every front. I'm going to quote just a few paragraphs from Mercola's analysis. Quote, "As noted by Tooze, we now face a series of significant challenges, and A, they're hitting us all at once, and B, several of them reinforce and worsen each other. Also notable is the fact that there's great uncertainty associated with some of them. What might be the pandemic potential of new COVID variants? Will the Russia-Ukraine conflict escalate into nuclear war? There's really no way to predict any amount of accuracy how the scenarios will play out. Several influences could be added into the mix, such as weaponization of the U.S. dollar, the deplatforming of Russia from the SWIFT system, U.S. meddling in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the push to expand NATO." He says a global hunger crisis seems alarmingly likely in part of all the major risks. The reason why the whole ends up being more dangerous than any combination of crises put together is the way they escalate, compound, and worsen each other in a symbiotic fashion, end quote. Speaking there of the possibility of nuclear war, while Russia is decimating the Ukrainian military on several fronts, the war in Ukraine is continuing to escalate as NATO, which really means America, of course, continues to use its puppet Zelensky and the people of Ukraine as pawns in its apparent scheme to subjugate Russia and China. Just to mention some of the headlines I ran across on the Greek website, War News 24/7, one headline reads, "Is a global crisis starting? Russia says we are on the brink of immediate armed conflict with the U.S. And this article detailed how American satellites gave coordinates recently in the last week, I think, for Ukrainian missile attacks inside Russia's borders. The article says, quote, a warning of immediate armed conflict with the U.S. and its allies was addressed by Russia after the powerful blow received at Novaya Kakhovka by American MLRS and HIMARS missiles, with coordinates given, according to the Russians, by American satellite. Quote, the mood is heavy in Moscow, as the Ukrainians often now strike with HIMARS in Kherson, Lugansk, and Donetsk. The Russians claim they are striking civilians in deep within cities within the apparent intention of terrorizing the population. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said today after the Kherson attack. This article is published today. Quote, the United States and its allies are on the brink of an open military conflict with Moscow, which will be fraught with nuclear tensions. Quote, having escalated the Ukrainian crisis and unleashed a violent hybrid confrontation with Russia, Washington and its allies, says Russia, are teetering dangerously on the brink of an open military confrontation with our country, meaning immediate armed conflict between nuclear powers. A confrontation would be fraught with nuclear escalation, the statement said. This is the first time that Moscow has used such rhetoric. The article continues, but you get the idea. Several other articles support the same conclusion, which is that the U.S. is driving the war in Ukraine and is hindering a negotiated solution there. Last week, Russia's President Putin said as follows in a televised speech to the Russian parliament. He said, quote, the policy of our parliament is based on the will of the people of Russia, on the belief that we are on the right side of history, on the unquestionable determination of the vast majority of the country's citizens to defend Russia's national sovereignty and help our people in Donbass. These are the basis of politics of our state as a whole. He said, the West's attempts to reverse the course of history are doomed to failure. The West is imposing on the world a model of total liberalism and a culture of cancellation, but this is impossible, said Putin. He said to the parliament there, today we hear that we started the war in Donbass. No, this one was started by the collective West that organized and supported the non-institutional armed coup in Ukraine in 2014 and then encouraged and justified the genocide against the people of Donbass. He said, the collective West is the direct instigator and perpetrator of what is happening today. If the West wanted to provoke a conflict, to move to a new level of war with Russia, to a new level of containment of our country, then we can say that it has succeeded. The war has been unleashed. The sanctions have been imposed. Today we hear that they want to defeat us on the battlefield. He said, what can anyone say? Let them try. We have heard many times that the West wants to fight us to the last Ukrainian. He said, this is a tragedy for the Ukrainian people, but everything shows that we are heading there. He said, the collective West is waging a war in Ukraine, and Russia's intervention in the pro-Western country marked the start of a shift towards a multipolar world. He said, at the same time, we do not reject peace talks, but those who reject them now should know that the further they go, the more difficult it will be for them to negotiate with us, concluded Putin. I also ran across another article. I'll end with this one. Published in Russia by a guy named Ivan Zwenko, who is a senior researcher at the Institute of International Studies, and he's also the associate professor of Oriental Studies in Moscow. And the headline of his article says, the U.S. is using the Ukraine crisis to unite the West behind its real goal, which he says is a face-off with China. That is this man's thesis. After several paragraphs explaining the difficult position that China is in with its quiet support of Russia while trying to appear neutral, and while Washington continues to expand NATO to now include Western Pacific partners, the article closes with this conclusion. I'm just going to read the last couple paragraphs. The indivisibility of security in the Euro-Atlantic and Indo-Pacific thesis has already emerged in rhetoric, effectively suggesting the creation of a global NATO. Thus, we are moving from a European security crisis to one that is truly global. In practice, a global NATO is already in the making, and the U.S.-led military bloc's Madrid summit in late June is the best proof of this. The first time in NATO's history, the Pacific states, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and South Korea were invited. Actions were intensified to form quasi-alliances, such as the Quad, Quadrilateral Security Dialogue between the U.S., Australia, Japan, and India, AUKUS, which is the trilateral pact between the U.S., Britain, and Australia, and partners in the Blue Pacific. AUKUS plus Japan and New Zealand. In contrast to the classical NATO, which has long been perceived in China as a vestige of the Cold War and intra-Western conflicts, these alliances have an unambiguous, an obvious, in other words, anti-Chinese orientation. He concludes, eventually, the Ukraine crisis may be remembered as a sideshow before the main event, which is war with China. The fact is that the American empire that now is, having evolved out of the America that once was, that at one time avoided foreign entanglements altogether and kept to itself in a policy of under the Monroe Doctrine, that America is now hell-bent, the American empire that now is now hell-bent on global hegemony, on ruling the globe. And in the end, whenever that comes, it will not go well for America. So back just for a moment to Dr. McCullough's article. There's much more to that article that includes charts and graphs and stuff that TUS came up with. And McCullough goes on to talk about how we can work locally to build a local food system before a famine and ensuing panic sets in. Knowing the heavy hand, actually, of economic tyranny that's going to be accompanying the forthcoming total collapse. In my opinion, the only one of those things that he offered there, and he had a list of five things he offered, the only one I see as practical is to build a network of local farmers that we might be able to obtain meat, eggs, and milk from. But as McCullough quotes this guy, Adam Tooze, as McCullough quotes him, Adam Tooze calls all of this a polycrisis of doom. But as we know, however, the Lord Jesus foretold all these things and referred to this polycrisis in Matthew 24:21 as a time of great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. I believe that may well be what's in front of us directly ahead. And then in verse 22, Jesus said, and except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. We do certainly need to continue preparations for those days of great tribulation. We've talked about this a lot in the past. Those days I do think are approaching. I mentioned actually in our house the rainwater collection system that we have for a backup water supply. But it occurs to me that in the event of a substantial nuclear exchange, rainwater may not be drinkable. And so I plan to work on water pressure drilling a shallow well in days to come. And I'd recommend anyone else relying on city water do the same. So that's the end of my update on current events. That brings me now finally to Paul's letter to the church at Rome, which was in many ways, I think, actually due to the way it was written.